Hey, this is Matt, director of Filmage, the story of the Descendants and all. You're listening to Dying Scene Radio.
Dying Scene Radio! Dying Scene, Dying Scene, Dying Scene, Dying Scene, Dying Scene Radio. Dying Scene Radio. Dying Scene Radio.
Here we go. It's episode number 25. I'm your host, Bob Noxious. Sitting across from me, 1,200 miles away, is my co-host, Bobby Pickles.
Yo, what's up, Bob?
Not much, man. And sitting not too far from him on my right is this week's guest host, documentary filmmaker Matt Riggle, who directed Filmage, the story of the Descendants all. Matt, thanks for being here. We appreciate your participation in the program.
Hey, glad to be here.
Welcome to the show. Hey, Matt, some people think of the Descendants as the overly caffeinated godfathers of pop punk, but I gotta ask you, man, right here, right off the bat, Descendants or all?
Me personally?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Jesus. No, I mean, that was the whole point of the movie, right? It's really hard to say, but I'm gonna take a lot of heat. I'm gonna say all.
Ooh, that's,
wow.
Going for the underdog,
it's,
you know?
It's hard to not. They were the first band that I got into, you know? And so, you know, you got to go with that, I suppose. Obviously, I love the Descendants, but yeah, I got a real soft spot for all. And when we did the film, one of the whole ideas was the Descendants are kind of known in the punk rock community way more than all ever has been. And, you know, so a lot of that was kind of exploring that why, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff going on. And you kind of just got to wonder, if you're a fan of both, you got to wonder why people don't like both, you know?
Well, I think that most people like both, but it's interesting that you chose all and that you heard of all before you've heard of Descendants. Where did you grow up at?
I grew up in Grand Prairie, Texas, just outside of Dallas. And, you know, it was a case of my older brother, 2 years older than me, got into punk rock, you know, right when he got into high school. And so I was, you know, 11, 12. He started bringing home records. And the first record was All Percolator. It was actually the Dot single. So we heard those songs, then we got Percolator. Kind of a strange album, maybe, to start with. But that was the launching point, and we followed them. And then we backtracked and realized, oh, wow, there's this whole other catalog of the Descendants. And then we just kind of followed all from there, and subsequently the Descendants. I was like 92 or so. I can't quite remember, 92, 93.
How did you fall into doing the documentary about Descendants all?
Just a little correction off the top. You know, I co-directed the film with my best friend, Dieter LaCour. We played in a band together, and we were big fans of Descendants and all. He's just as much an all fan as I am. We kind of got into him around the same time, though we didn't know each other then. But he and I went and recorded with Stefan, the current guitar player of all and Descendants. And we went and recorded with him up in Tulsa, which is about 5 hours north of Dallas. Got to know Stefan pretty well through that. This is about 10 years ago. And Stefan, if you've ever met the guy, you know that he's just one of the nicest, most charming guys you'll ever meet, especially in music. But even outside of that, he's just a great guy. And, you know, we became fast friends, and he was very supportive of us. He helped us a lot with our band. And back then, 10 years ago, we kind of floated the idea with him. And from there, we just kind of stuck with it. You know, Dietl and I both worked in television. At the time, I was doing news and a little bit of documentary stuff. And then Dietl was doing some documentary commercials, that kind of thing. And so we kind of had that going on in our lives, you know. And it was just a matter of kind of bringing it all together.
Cool, man.
And what's the name of the band, your band, with Dietl?
Oh, it's 41 Gorgeous Blocks.
41 Gorgeous what?
You know, we did a couple of tours. Unless you were one of the 9 people at the shows, you may not know us. But we put out a good 6-7 records over about a 10 or so year period. But, you know, we played a lot of just regionally and kind of a part-time thing for us all.
Sure. Now, was this when you guys were based out of Texas and then going up to Tulsa, or were you elsewhere?
Yeah, we were in Texas, right outside of Dallas. We played Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin. We kind of made that loop, and then we branched out a little bit in the early, mid-2000s. We did a couple of national things, East Coast, West Coast things. And then I moved up to Philadelphia about 2012. That's after we got done with the first cut of Filmage. We were still kind of in the process of editing it, but we kind of had a whole thing done, and we kind of had this lull. I was kind of in between jobs and all this stuff, and I just wanted to kind of get out and check out the East Coast, and so I came up here.
Let's roll into some news. Bobby, what you got this week, dude?
Josh Greenberg, the 28-year-old former University of Florida student who co-founded now-defunct music streaming site Grooveshark, was found dead in his home in Gainesville, Florida on Sunday. Local police found no evidence of foul play or suicide. An autopsy was performed on Monday morning with a toxicology report expected in the next 2 to 3 months. Grooveshark was shut down in early May as part of the settlement with major music labels Universal Music Group, Warner Music Group, and Sony Music Group. It was started in Gainesville by Greenberg and co-founder Sam Tarantino, who were both freshmen at Florida. I believe Greenberg was from St. Petersburg originally also, man. Actually, I'm from St. Petersburg down there. I went to University of Florida like this guy did. Mm-hmm. I could ask you, did you go to film school down in Texas?
No, I wouldn't call it that. I mean, sort of. I studied video technology, you know, cameras, shooting, editing, and all that. Not so much to make films. I just kind of got in it because I needed something to do. And it was a really good little program. And, you know, I got an internship where I worked in news for a long time. And then I went back and got a degree in social psychology and writing. So, you know, I kind of avoided film school. Not necessarily on purpose, but it just never was exactly my goal. But when we got into doing this film, it's our first film that we produced and directed and everything. And so, you know, it was such a learning curve. Even though we had worked on other movies and in other capacities, it was, you know, quite a steep learning curve, which is why it took a few years.
I recently watched a 2012 Descendants interview where Bill Stevenson's talking about pulling out pictures and whatnot to show the film age guys, he said. How long was the film in production?
Let's see. You know, I think the official rolling of tape was Fun Fest. I think it was 2010. It was whenever Devo was actually on the bill, and I think their guitar player cut his hand. You know, it's a music festival down in Austin, which has been growing and growing year after year. It's a huge festival now, and it was big back then, too. But Descendants got on that bill. They hadn't played a show as Descendants or All, and I mean, I think it was coming up to 10 years or something, close to it anyway, maybe like 8 years. Anyway, so that was their first show back, and we had been talking about doing this, you know, in these months leading up. We got the call from Stefan right when he told us about that they got that show. So he was just like, hey, come down to Austin, let's start, you know, let's do this thing. It was our first backstage passes and all this stuff, and so we kind of got the ball rolling. So that was October of 2010. You know, I think on average we basically shot for a year, edited for a year. That's basically how it went down. And then another year of all the other stuff, of all the behind the scenes, getting rights to songs and all this stuff. You know, we had, it was a small crew working with us, but everybody just kind of like had a big chunk of work to do throughout this process. So it's kind of hard to say exactly how long, because it's not like we were all doing it full time, but we were occasionally, a few months here and there, it was all full time. Traveling and stuff.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Let me do another news story really quick here, man. Iggy Pop and Henry Rollins will star in a new silent film called Guterdammerung. I don't even know. That's crazy, man.
Wait. Did you say silent film?
Yes,
and hold on. Did you say
it's
Henry Rollins?
Henry Rollins silent? And Iggy Pop.
Okay, I wasn't sure you said Henry Rollins and silent. I just did not think that was possible, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
How do you silence Henry Rollins? He's got so much to say.
Right.
And it's a Western, too. Go ahead, Bobby. Go ahead and butcher this director's name.
Guterdammerung. It's subtitled The Loudest Silent Movie on Earth.
Ah, and now it all makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, the feature's being directed by photographer and video director Bjorn Tagamus, whatever the fuck, however you pronounce that. Rollins says the aim is to have a live band accompany the film, similar to how silent films used to have live pianists prior to talkie films. Hey, Matt, you mentioned before you had a co-director. It's bad enough having a co-host, man. Did you guys get into any tiffs or struggles when you guys were working together?
You know, I mean, of course, we hate each other's guts. No. No, it's he and I played in the band for, you know, I don't know, 10 years before this and then through this. And so we worked pretty well together in this certain way where I'm kind of the one that's up and down. I'm very excited and very passionate about something, and then I'm just down and about it, and I'm just doubting it, and you know what I mean? But Dietl's the guy, he's like Stefan in a lot of ways, where he's just very even keel. Positive guy, but not like overly positive or anything. He's just very realistic, and you know, he's the guy that with this project kept the ball rolling the entire time, whereas, you know, I would run with it and then I would kind of crash with it, you know what I mean? So we work very well in that capacity, kind of wear different mm-hmm. hats.
Yeah, so Stefan was your invitation in, huh? It was kind of just like, hey, just come on down and just start filming.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. But, you know, from what I understand, there have been a couple of crews who have tried to make a movie about mm-hmm. the Descendants and all. You know, with us, it was all timing. You know, it wasn't like there was some magical thing that had anything to do with us. It was a lot of timing, you know, persistence on our part, mm-hmm. Dietl's part. Dietl is really the one who really persisted and like, let's do this thing. And then the trust kind of built up along the way. You know, Stefan, we had known. But with Bill, kind of like, who are these guys? Do I really want to waste my time? And, you know, I don't know for sure if that's what he thought, but I kind of assume maybe that was what was going on. But, you know, mm-hmm. once he kind of realized, oh, these guys are not, you know, just kind of a flash in the pan kind of a thing, that they're dedicated to it, he opened up to us, you know, gave us just a really tremendous interview. You know, we recorded about 3 to 4 hours with him alone. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, he really did open up to you guys, man, and cried about his father and whatnot. And that was, you really got him to open up.
Did somebody tip you off to ask him about his father? How did you get those tears to flow?
My co-director's chopping onions just outside the frame. So, I love that dude. I worship him. Before we did this film, I mean, he's an amazing guy. And his songwriting, and I can say this about every one of these guys. Carl is very much like this too, as is Stefan and, you know, Milo and Chad and Scott and everybody, Dave. Their songs are so, they're just very real, and they hit you at this just guttural level, and I feel like I know them. And so I'd picked up through a handful of Bill's songs about his father, and I was just curious what was going on there. What was the relationship? What was, you know, something made Bill become the guy he is, who is this very fascinating guy, and yeah, it's just like, how did that happen, you know? That was really all there was to it. And, you know, there's a particular song that we talk about in the movie that is about his dad, is more overtly than maybe some of the others, and I think he brought that song up in the interview. He was talking about just lyrics in general, and he brought up that song, and so I just asked him, you know, do you want to talk about your dad? And he was just very quiet for a long time. I mean, he just kind of sat there and kept saying, you know, no, I don't. But he was just, you could tell he was thinking about it. And then he just...
Yeah, you could tell he wanted to, though.
I don't know if he wanted to. I just think he knew that it was very sincere. It wasn't like, hey, you know, it wasn't us trying to get some scoop. I mean, it was just And as a matter of fact, you know, I asked him that, and then he says, no, I don't. And he was just kind of quiet, and I was just... mentioned, I was like, you know, a lot of his fans are just, we just care and we wonder about this scenario, and we don't, nobody really knows, and so that's why I'm asking, you know. And I think he realized that it was a very pure thing, and he just finally said, oh, you know, and he talked about his dad. It was really as simple as that.
Yep, just your inquisitive nature. Hey, Bob, speaking of Descendant songs and all this stuff, do you want to play some music?
Absolutely, as long as you don't ask me to choose between who my favorite band is, between Descendants and all.
I think we all have to.
Maybe I'll tell at the end of the show. Okay, so the Descendants put out this one track right here called Clean Sheets. It's from their fourth record called All, which was released in 87 through SST Records. And by the way, it was the band's first album with their bassist Carl Alvarez and guitarist Stefan Egerton. So new songwriting came to the group, and the concept of All was formed by Bill Stevenson. This is what resulted. Clean Sheets. Descendants on Dying Scene Radio.
My pillow. is Jim from Pennywise and the Rap. You're listening to Dying Teen Radio.
That track right there was Descendants doing I Don't Want to Grow Up from their second record called Descendants. Released all the way back in 85 through New Alliance Records. Marked the end of the two-year hiatus of the band and their singer, Milo Ackerman, who had been going to college. Bobby, what do you think, dude? Descendants or all?
Descendants. You know what? I like Descendants, man. I like all, too. I know it's the same exact band with just a different singer, but I don't know, man. It's something about Milo. Just like you were talking about, holding your back pocket and looking like the anti-front man, looking like the nerd. It's such an iconic image in my brain of that, you know? Oh, yeah. It'd be a great t-shirt design from Fat Enzo, to tell you the truth.
I can't wait to see that one. Matt, what's your favorite all singer?
Oh, man. You know, that's even harder. That's harder. Now, you can't choose. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, I love Dave Smalley. But he released less material, so maybe that would put him down, but I do love those records. But, you know, Scott, again, was the first singer that I, of the whole shebang, you know, and he's got such this great, unique voice. He's very melodic, you know. I love punk rock, but my favorite stuff is very melodic. I mean, I love energy, I love, you know, sometimes I love brash harshness, but I really love great melodies, and, you know, there's not many people better than Scott Reynolds from a vocal standpoint in punk, you know. Now, Chad, on the other hand, his voice is probably one of the greatest in music. He just has such a range. I mean, just not... Well, Scott has a diverse range, but what Chad has is just this very pure, natural singing voice, you know. I mean, I just love all those records, so it's you can't choose, you know. Yeah. And as people, they're just all so awesome, you know. They're so... Such a unique group of people, which is what makes a movie cool, in my opinion. You know, it's like there's no duds. You know, everybody's a weirdo in some way.
So much history to learn. You taught me a lot in this movie. I had no idea that Bill came from a fishing background. I've actually met Bill Stevenson before. It never came up in conversation, and I would have never thought to ask.
Right. There was a little bit, you know, they have a couple of songs on the early records that, you know, reference that. But, yeah, and I still don't think it came across... Even in the movie, like how much of a fisherman he is. I mean, he's still into it and he is crazy about it. I'm trying to remember who told this story. I think it must have been Doug, you know, their second bassist, was talking about how Bill, it was in high school, because they went to high school together far before they were in a band together. But Bill used to have this crazy schedule where he would stay up all night fishing, him and his friend, they would fish all night. And then they would park the boat and go to school and then sleep after school. That was his life, you know, up all night. And that's when he started drinking coffee. But anyway, there was one morning where Bill, I just remember Doug saying, you know, Bill comes up and he's wearing a sleeping bag and he's just in his own world and he's looking at this device and he's just so focused on it. And he's, you know, it's almost like the way people nowadays would look at their cell phone, just straight down walking toward him. And he's like, what do you got there? And he's like, dude, it's a depth finder. and he was just mesmerized by some little gizmo depth finder or something. And so, you know, it wasn't just a hobby. You know, he literally, it was his job for a little while.
I never caught the lyrics on those earlier songs like you mentioned. Are you the kind of guy that reads lyrics from the records and understand what people are singing? Or
yeah, definitely love lyrics and their songs especially. They just, you know, one of the things I love is on their records, they always look the same. If you notice, their layout of the records is always consistent. The lyrics are in all caps and it's the same font, you know what I mean? So especially their records. I mean, I do this with every band, you know, when they put lyrics in. But yeah, you sit there and just read the stuff and try to understand, you know, these people. And they kind of make it easy because they don't really hide behind, you know, the metaphor and the kind of abstractions. They're just short declarative sentences, you know. They're like Hemingway, you know what I'm saying? They're not hiding anything. She broke my dick, you know, that's a
that's poetic
as an example. Yes,
Bobby, what do we got more in the news this week?
More death news, Bob. The BBC is reporting that Arthur Cave, the 15-year-old son of Nick Cave, has died after falling from a cliff in Brighton, England. According to the report, Arthur Cave was found at the bottom of Ovingdon Gap on Tuesday with serious injuries. He was taken to Royal Sussex County Hospital, where he later died. Matt, you interviewed damn near everyone involved in Descendants, or all, but there was one key person missing, and that was Frank Navetta, the original guitarist and co-founder of the Descendants, and also the guy who coined the name with the funny spelling. Mm-hmm. What was up with that spelling, by the way, man?
I never got to the bottom of that.
Yeah, you never did get to the
bottom
of that.
Never did, and as a matter of fact, you know, in Bill's interview, we asked him, you know, about the name, and he was just like, yeah, I don't know, it's just our name.
Did he just misspell it? I mean,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if I could guess.
So Frank unfortunately passed away in 2008. Yeah. I wanted to talk about Frank for a second. He was a strange dude. That's what I gathered from the film. He set his instruments ablaze and then moved to Oregon, where he became a fisherman, just like you guys are talking about fishing. Mm-hmm. It encompassed this whole thing and started it in a lot of ways. What is it about fishing, man? I'm from Florida originally. I hate fishing. Bob, do you enjoy fishing?
You know, as a kid, not so much. Now, I like drinking some beers on the high seas. I'll throw the rod in the water a little bit, yeah. If fishing's okay,
Bob,
but
when you spoke with Bill, what was that? That was did you do that for your other radio show or something? Or
no, actually, it was this predates it. Well, Bill's always done production work, and my band years ago were in talks with him about you going to Colorado and recording a record. And honestly, we just couldn't get it worked out financially. It would have been great to do, but we didn't. But he ended up coming here into Florida. And I met him then, just it was at a show and just briefly chatted and put the name to the face. We didn't hang out for too long, you know, but it was nice to meet him.
Well, that seems like a positive story, though. I mean, I know your Fat Mike story.
If you hang around long enough, you got a positive and negative story of both Bill and Fat Mike. I think that's just the way it goes.
Oh, let's just go there. I mean, you know, Bill is this guy he's like this OCD workaholic guy. Very domineering, would you say?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think he's domineering in the sense that it's coming from a very real place, and he's a very fair guy, I think. I think he's a brilliant guy. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's not even hyperbolic. I think he is a very unique individual. If you just look at the amount of people that claim this guy is a friend and like their best friend, you know, all these guys in these bands that he's worked with, the bonds that he has with them, you know, it's not like I got to work with this producer and yeah, he's kind of a fucking asshole and he was riding me and all this, but the record came out good. It's like, no, everybody loves him. You know, they get that he is really passionate. But yeah, I mean, I think that's an apt description, what you said, because, you know, we showed it in the movie a little bit where he's very hard on his players and singers, especially. To get the take,
yeah,
that he knows is in
yeah.
there. He's not unrealistic. You know, he knows the level of these guys, and he's bringing that out. He's not making them do something that they're not capable of, you know?
I feel like the documentary kind of builds up to Bill. You know, there's all these moments and segments where, as the film progresses, the lineup changes or a different band member's highlighted, and it kind of culminates with Bill Stevenson and... How difficult is he to work with, though? I noticed a few outtakes where he got a little heated that he was being recorded and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the first, I've kind of lost all the dates in my head of when we did the stuff, but it was darn near a year into shooting before we got Bill. And we didn't even know up until maybe a couple weeks before, we didn't know if we were going to get him. And there was a period of, you know, we talked to Stefan, and I wrote up this kind of proposal kind of a thing, sent it to Bill, and just heard nothing. And then heard, like, kind of something that was not, didn't seem interested. But then Stefan was kind of like, no, he'll get around to it. And then we went to that Fun Fest I mentioned. And, you know, we were on cloud nine. You know, we're huge fans. We're backstage. We just watched their first show in, you know, years. And we talked to Milo back there, who's also the nicest guy you'll ever meet. Milo, Stefan, you know, Carl, all these guys were just great. And they were talkative. And then I go to Bill, and that's in the movie where he's just like, you know, what are you doing? You know, just like looking at me. And, you know, there's a camera guy that he didn't actually see. He saw me holding this Zoom recorder out. And he's like, why are you recording me? And it was just right after the show. I think he was a little disoriented. He was sweating. And so, you know, it's not like he was just a jerk or anything, but he was just caught off guard. And as a matter of fact, later when I explained to him who we were, and he's like, oh, yeah, you guys. Sorry, I didn't have my glasses. I couldn't tell who, you know.
Oh, okay.
But he's a, I don't know the word. I don't know if he's a private guy. I don't quite know if that's the word. But he is very, you know, he has a certain amount of energy like we all do. And he likes to dedicate himself to whatever is the task at hand. You know, he doesn't multitask. Bill's not a multitasker. If he's editing a vocal track, that's all he's doing, and you better not bother him. You know what I mean? And so we kind of had to figure out. Dietl's really good at kind of seeing what Bill's schedule might be and making assumptions and talking to other people and finding, oh, this is probably a good window to talk to him, and then sending him a text, and then he writes us right back. You know what I mean? So it's a matter of just getting on his radar. You know, I mean, he's a busy guy. He's a workaholic, as you said.
Yeah. There's that cartoon depicting Bill and his buddy fishing, and his fishing buddy would fill the boat with the fish to the point where Bill was concerned that they might sink. Mm-hmm. And his friend was like, no, all.
Right.
What is the quest for all? What does that mean to you? Because, again, in the bonus footage, you proposed that question to numerous people. Can you answer that, too?
Having heard all these people that we interviewed, we asked almost everybody what it meant to them. Some people laughed it off like, I don't know, I don't care. Some people were like, I don't really know. It's kind of a weird thing. And some people were so passionate, like, oh, all? It's like the most important thing, you know what I mean? And so I have an opinion of it. I mean, I've heard everybody talk about it, and so maybe my opinion's changed. But before I heard what the band said about it, what everything, I had my own opinion, and that was even in the proposal that I sent to Bill early on, that was a big thing for me. I find it fascinating. I don't know, it's not really a philosophy, but it's just this method of living life of why not? It kind of goes back to what I'm talking about, Bill doesn't multitask. Why spread yourself thin across everything? You know, just go in, dive deep, do that thing, you know, and then come up for air, then go to the next thing. You know, so that's kind of what it is to me. And it's a very inspiring thing. You know, it's the phrase that they use is trying to achieve all, you know, the quest for all. It's not this thing that they're doing. It's this thing they're trying to do. Nobody can do it perfectly, but it's a goal. It's this high bar. You know what I mean? And I find that cool that somebody cares enough to even come up with this high bar, you know, whether or not they're going to actually do it all the time. And like I say, nobody does. But I just find it fascinating that the kind of mind that says, I need this in my life so I can kind of look at this thing up on the wall that I want to hit down every time I can, you know.
I agree with that. Bobbo?
Let's do some music, man. So being that I love the Descendants, I've chosen another song here. I'm going to play nothing but Descendants and All songs tonight, or bands that have done Descendants or All songs. So I got one here from Bouncing Souls. This is Pervert, and it's from the compilation record Homage. It's the Bouncing Souls on Dying Scene Radio. Yeah.
This is Blag the Ripper representing the dwarves, and you're tuned to the sounds of Dying Scene Radio.
Track right there was another cover song from one of my favorite bands, Good Riddance. It's from the Filter Magazine compilation record, Milo Turns 50. Awesome stuff right there, man. Sour Grapes. Hey, Matt, how did you get Dave Grohl?
Dave had, I think it was in Rolling Stone originally, perhaps, that a guitar player, some magazine that Deedle, I think, saw years ago, where Dave Grohl was just talking about how influenced he was by the band. In the article, he talked about how he used to play Milo Goes to College on pillows on his bed. You know, this is before Dave Grohl had a drum set. This is him listening to Milo Goes to College, playing Bill Stevenson's drum parts on pillows on his bed, you know. He said it's what got him into playing drums. And so anyway, we knew that. And so it was like, we know this guy was influenced. Let's try to get him. We had a couple of producers and Deedle. Everybody kind of went down these paths with him where it was like, you know, let's talk, try to find his agent, try to find his publicist, try to talk to this person, that person. And we kind of couldn't get anywhere. You know, somebody that famous, they have so many like layers around them that it's just, they're just hard to get access to, you know? And we even actually knew somebody who was working on Dave's film at the time when they were shooting Sound City. And it's like the guy was like, you know, I see him every day, but I just can't go up to him and say, hey, can you call these guys, you know? So we got so close, and then we was just like, you know, I guess we just can't get him. And Deedle was talking to Bill, and they're talking about what we had coming up and what we were doing, and he mentioned him, and he's just like, you know, we tried to talk to his agent, his publicist, his record label, you know, we even knew a guy on his film set, but we just can't reach him. And Bill's just like, oh, he's just like, should I text him? You know, so he did, and within a few days we get an email from Dave like, cool, let's do it. So that was how that went down. Over a period of a very trying, I don't know, handful of months or so, Deedle was really trying, you know, he knew we could get him as we could just reach him. And so he kind of took that one and ran, and it finally paid off.
It's kind of like that quest for all.
There you go.
Well, speaking of Dave Grohl, how about some news really quick? Nirvana's posthumous self-titled record will be pressed on vinyl for the first time since it was released in 2002. Due out August 28th, 2015 on Geffen Records, the record features unreleased material and rarities, including the studio version of You Know You're Right, alongside tracks from Nevermind, In Utero, Bleach, and their Blue EP, available on 45 RPM double LP, pressed on 180-gram heavyweight vinyl. Matt, you just got done talking about how you interviewed Dave Grohl for the film, and that's pretty awesome, man. I know he talks about how influenced he was musically, how he knew how to play every single note from Milo Goes to College. Who was the one person you interviewed where you were like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm actually talking to this person? Or did you just get jaded by this whole experience? Or no, was it Dave Grohl?
For me personally, it was the band members. You know, Bill, sitting in a room with Bill was insane to me. Milo. We rented a hotel room in Chinatown in LA, and we were talking to Milo. Like, this is happening now. You know, it was a very weird, every interview was always, there's some weird environment or just something about the environment that's strange. And, you know, then the person, and then the fact that the whole reason you're there is because I have to ask this person stuff now. You know what I mean? So I felt that really with everybody. You know, Dave Grohl, obviously, that was huge. Nerve-wracking in a lot of ways, just because you want to make sure you get what you need to get.
Where did you interview Mr. Grohl?
At his office in LA. They were actually cutting Sound City at that place that day, and so we had him for a couple hours.
Where did you interview Fat Mike, man? It looked like it was like at a carnival. Was that the Fun Fest?
No, that was, where was that? That was in LA. Yeah, one of the big festivals that we went to out there. He was, you know, on the side of the stage during their entire set, of course, just singing along. You know, he's such a diehard fan. And
yeah.
So yeah, we just kind of caught him backstage.
And obviously he likes the Descendants more than all, because in the outtakes, he had that quote. Yeah. He said like that all put out a bunch of shitty records and nobody's going to be honest and tell you guys this.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Bob, do you want to share with Matt your Fat Mike story, man?
Oh, my story's old these days, man. But
well, so is Fat Mike, so it might work out.
I ran into him at a Warp Tour, and I had a record that was out, and ran into him in the back, and I was, hey, Mike, you know, I don't want to bother you. I think that you're great. I love the band, and I play in a band, too. We're playing over there on the Kevin Says stage, and check it out. Here's our CD. You know, if you get a chance, give it a listen. Nice to meet you. And he looks at the CD rather intently and kind of flips upside down, looks it over, and says, yeah, you know, what'd you say your name was? Bob. Yeah, okay, yeah. Bobby, looks good, man. Looks like you guys are going to go far, real far. And as he does it, he's chucking the CD and, you know, like, walking off. And it was such a dick move that it was cool. So, you know, it's one of those things. It was punk as fuck.
Well, you know.
I laughed it off then. I laugh it off now. But that's why I don't go up and talk to people. You know, I don't bug people anymore.
I'm the same way. I've, you know, met pretty much everybody that I've have always really, really wanted to, that I had access to, you know? But I'm never that guy to just, yeah. I mean, sometimes you stand in line and there's a couple of guys ahead of you. You just want to say, hey, you know, you don't want an autograph. You don't want this. You just want to don't even want to shake their hand. I don't want to inconvenience you by giving you these germs. You know, it's not about that. It's just like letting them know, like, you know, I love your band or just something like that. And there's always that guy right in front of you who's just going on way too long about it and, you know, getting them to sign four things. And I never wanted to be that guy, but I like meeting people. You know, when you're a punk fan, you can meet your heroes, you know, a lot of times.
Absolutely.
After a fairly lengthy dormant period, there have been recent signs of life in the Viva Death camp. If you're not familiar, Viva Death started as the baritone guitar-driven side project of Face to Face's Scott Shiflett and Trevor Keith, who I believe, Matt, you interviewed those guys for the film as well. Is that correct?
I personally didn't. I wasn't there for that. That was our buddy Daniel Jarvis, one of the camera guys on the film.
Nice. Well, apparently there's been a series of snippet videos posted to their Facebook page revealing that the band is hard at work at iSocket Studios. So stay tuned because there's most likely a fourth full-length album in the works. Face to Face are one of my all-time favorite bands, man. I was going to ask you what those guys were like, but obviously
you don't know. You know, that's a band I never actually met. I've seen them play, but I personally have never met them, but when I was getting into punk, they were huge to me. I always carried their cassette around with me.
Right, and then the Big Choice album, they did a cover on for Bike Age. Right. What's up with the word age, man? Bike Age, My Age,
right.
Live Age, Film Age.
Film Age.
Do you know the story behind that?
Not exactly. You know, we wanted that to be in the movie. Then we thought, well, we'll at least put it in the trailer. But then it just never happened. But basically, yeah, they have a ton of songs. You know, almost every record has a song or two that has, you know, Bike Age, My Age, you know, that kind of thing. They all end in that. And it's just, you know, I think Tony Lombardo mentioned probably the most realistic, you know, what it is. And he's like, it's just Bill being Bill. You know, somebody said something and he, you know, Bike Age, you know, there was just some riff. And then it was just always, here's a new song. And it didn't have a title. So they would give it a somethingage, you know, Tony. There was an instrumental called Tonyage, you know what I mean? And I think it was just kind of as simple as that, but they stuck with it. Again, I love the consistency of these guys, you know. They had a little reverb, it was the 80s, but they don't have a bunch of dated sounding records. They didn't have like the keyboard record, you know what I mean? It's always the same setup with these guys and the same songs. I mean, you listen to them play a live set from front to back today, and if you had to guess what era the song came from, you couldn't. It just sounds like this consistency, you know?
Yeah, it's true that the production quality is so different as you listen to it, you know, as it improves from the 80s till now. Like you said, if you're listening to it at a concert, you wouldn't even know, but when you listen to all the old recordings, you obviously know.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
But they weren't quite as dated as maybe some of the... I mean, certainly a lot of stuff going on in the 80s sounds way more 80s than the All stuff, you know, and the Descendants stuff. But yeah, I think everybody was guilty of that. I like the way those records sound, personally.
So talking about those records, Bill Stevenson put out in 1989, All Roy's Revenge. And it features this track right here about one of his crazy ex-girlfriends with whom he had a tumultuous relationship. It's called She's My Ex. By the way, the B-side track, Crazy, is written by Carl Alvarez. It's from the recording sessions, but not included on the album. Anyway, here it is. This is All doing She's My Ex on Dying Scene Radio.
This is Andrew WK reminding you that you're tuned in and partying extraordinarily hard right here on Dying Scene Radio.
Ambition has its price. Nothing ever works for me. I forget everything I'm told. Now I fucking lost my keys again. Won't let anything go through. Won't let nothing rest. I'm problematic. I'm problematic. I'm problematic.
Right there was another one from All. This one featuring Chad Price. Problematic. It was the eighth studio album, which they recorded in their own recording studio in Fort Collins, Colorado. Now, one thing I learned from the movie was they got that recording studio from the record companies from, what was it, All, where they got their money?
Yeah.
Ironic that, you know, that's where they cashed in at. And, you know, there's so many great records before and after it. Well, let's talk about All now. You know, All was just not that band that really caught on with everybody. And like you say, it's your favorite band, but it's not even like a love them or hate them thing. I think I myself always enjoyed All because I knew Descendants beforehand. But it was just never Descendants, and that's why I'm going to pick Descendants. But,
I'm outnumbered.
But,
as usual.
I never did get to make it into the studio. Did you go to that trip over there to talk to Bill into the blasting room?
Yeah, we shot Bill and Chad and Bill's doctor. Spoiler alert. Bill has a doctor.
Oh, yeah, spoiler alert. That is a spoiler.
But yeah, we kind of did all those within a couple of days over at the Blasting Room. I actually had been there before. This was, I'm trying to remember, this was 98 or so. I was on vacation in Colorado Springs, which isn't that close to Fort Collins. It's like a 5 or 6 hours away or so. And I was out there with my ex-girlfriend's family lived out there. So we were out there hanging out, and I just wanted to go see Fort Collins because I was a crazy fan, and we were out there going out of our minds, just bored. You know, we were like on this 2-week trip or something. And so we went out, we were like, oh, we're going to go hang out in Fort Collins. So we went out there, and I just like walked in the blasting room, you know, and as a matter of fact, Scott Reynolds' band, The Pavers, were recording a record. And I just kind of walked in and was like, oh, hey, and I realized then I had nothing to say. I just wanted to go see the blasting room, you know, but now here I am. And like, I just interrupted some band session and Bill Stevenson's sitting in the control room because the door was open. So I just walked in and I'm like, hey, I just wanted to check out the studio. You know, I was thinking about doing some recording. You know, I just pretended like, oh, you guys aren't my heroes or anything. You know, I'm just interested in the studio, you know? So anyway, Bill was real nice. He was like, oh, okay. He's like, can you come back at like 9 tomorrow morning? And I was like, okay. And so I left, you know, because they were in the middle of recording. And anyway, at 9, I was so embarrassed. I was like, I don't want to go there. I just wish that didn't even happen. And then I just was like, all right, well, we'll just go. So I just went there at 9, and there was nobody there. But then at 9:03, a car pulls up and drops Bill off, and he's walking in. And I go in with him, and we drink coffee, and we just talk for like 2 hours about music and bands. And it was amazing.
Did you get a chance?
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Did you get a chance?
I never brought that up to him.
Oh.
Not who knows if he'd remember it. I'm sure he might. Who knows? It was a very bizarre thing, and I was, even after hanging out with him, I was like embarrassed of it, and I never even told anybody about it till now, actually.
Dude, that's crazy, man. I can't believe you did that, and you never even brought it up.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing, man. That blasting room, is that owned by the entire band, or is it like Stevenson and Steffens, or just Stevenson's?
I don't really know how it breaks down, honestly. I think maybe they all have a piece of it. I don't know. but Bill works there. You know, Stefan did, but then Stefan moved to Tulsa. He had a studio in Tulsa for a while. I think he's been mostly like mixing records, which he does mainly at home. So Stefan's up and running kind of in a different capacity because he lives so far away. But I don't quite know.
You know, you mentioned the spoiler before, and I don't want to spoil the film for anybody, but, at the end, Bill has a little bit of a health issue. It really sidelined him for a little bit. And he says a funny thing at the end. He says, "It's rad not to die." I thought that was cool. And then he talks about the doctor you just mentioned who saved his life, and he was a big punk rock fan. Now, how cool was that doctor, man? Was that doctor cool or what?
Oh, man, yeah. He's one of the nicest guys we talked to the whole time. Yeah, smart, funny, cool dude. And his story is amazing. You don't want to ruin anything, but it is quite an amazing story. You know, there was a part that he told that didn't make the movie where he was just talking about how, I think a little bit of it made it into the film, but, you know, he was just a doctor that was on duty at the time, and he goes in, and there's this guy, and he said, he just looked like a random guy, you know? I mean, overweight dude laying in a bed. And the doctor made the point. He's like, you know, nobody looks like themselves in a hospital bed. Everybody's kind of in there at their worst, you know? So you can't even recognize your own mom or whatever at a hospital. And so it was kind of like that where he got to talking to him and realized who he was as Bill's kind of telling him. And Bill's he's not like, oh, yeah, I'm the drummer of the Descendants. He's just telling him, I play drums in a punk band. And the doctor's like, oh, yeah, like who? And, you know, and so anyway, yeah, that part made it in the film, I think, where he realizes, he looks down at the chart and it's like, it says like William Stevenson or whatever. And he's like, you're Bill Stevenson, you know, and he goes, and yeah, I mean, after he gotten well and all this stuff, the doctor came back and was like, hey, I just wanted to show you this. And he, just so you don't think I was making it up. And it was a picture of him wearing a homemade Black Flag shirt, you know. So pretty cool.
That's cool, man. Bob, you want me to do some news?
Yeah, man. Do it up.
Bad Religion has announced a 2-month-long European tour that begins next month with support from Snuff, the Broadway Killers, and the Interrupters. Dates and locations can be found on dyingscene.com. Matt, Milo left the Descendants to become a scientist, man. Bill even says at one point in the film that it was just an understanding that every now and again, Milo was going to have to leave to pursue his science. So who's the bigger nerd, do you think? Greg Graffin or Milo Aukerman?
Oh, man.
Or is it a toss-up, man?
That's a toss-up, but I don't know if he could be... It's either a toss-up that it's a tie or it's Milo, I think.
Don't they both study biology?
Yeah, Milo's a biochemist. Milo, he works for DuPont.
He does something with plants, man. Does he, like, do stuff with... GMOs or something?
I don't quite know. And something like that, because he told us a little bit about it. He wasn't hiding anything. I just mean we didn't talk a whole lot about it, but he says it's controversial. I mean, it is, but but from what I understand, what he does, it's just kind of, he works with corn mostly, or he did, and it's about trying to make the most efficient corn. For him, it's just fascinating how you can get in there and do that.
It sounds very suspect, man. Like, he almost has come up with that, you know, pesticide-resistant corn or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But he did tell a funny story. I know we don't have much time, but whenever he got hired on at this job, part of the hiring process, you go and you do this intensive interview, and then you go and you're giving some big presentation, and there's a panel there watching you give this presentation in front of a room full of scientists, you know? And he was doing this presentation, and right after he was done, a couple of dudes, scientists from the crowd, came up to him to get his autograph, like, hey, man, we're such huge fans, and, you know, it's so cool that you're here and all this stuff. And the panel is watching this happen. You know, this guy who they have no idea who he is. He's just a prospective employee or, you know, scientist or whatever. And they're just watching this, and they kind of ask him after that, you know, what's that all about? You know, and he's like, I played in this band and whatever. He kind of dismissed it, and they pressed him on it. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, I'm actually playing a show, in a couple weeks. And I think it was in Philly, because I think he was sitting in with All was coming through, and he was going to sing a couple songs or something like that. So anyway, cut to that show. Milo kind of forgot about it, but he said he was on stage singing and looked down, and like in a couple rows back, there were these two guys from his panel just kind of sitting there with their arms crossed watching him, you know. But he ended up getting the job. Thought that was pretty funny.
Those are such cool inside stories that you've gained and had the opportunity to share with the world. Now, how many screens has the movie seen at this point?
You know, I don't even know. I was actually, I just looked at our website, which one of our producer and main editor on the film, James Rayburn, he's the guy, he's the go-to guy. He books everything and just does kind of everything. And I was just looking at, so he's the guy, he could probably tell you off the top of his head. I'm looking at this website, scrolling down of all the screenings. And, you know, it's screened almost everywhere. So it's been quite a ride. You know, this band toured for decades. And they toured all over the world, and there is a worldwide fan base. And so, you know, we kind of fell into this, and so we have, the movie has this fan base that it's unfathomable to me. But yeah, I mean, we're doing screenings still occasionally. We just had one in Mexico recently. We're doing one in Boston, just outside of Boston, next month. And, you know, it's still kind of rolling along.
And it was released in December 2014, is that right?
Yeah, that's when it came out on Blu-ray. We kind of, for about a year, you know, we did festivals and we did one-off screenings and all this. And then, yeah, last year it came out. We did a premiere in L.A. We actually ran for a few weeks in L.A. I think we signed up for like a week or two to run in a theater, and it ended up doing well, and it kind of kept going for several weeks after that. So that was cool. And we did a premiere in New York and stuff. And then it was just kind of about the Blu-ray came out. We had all the bonus material. So people who had seen the film in the last year, well, now there was basically another film, 90 minutes or so of bonus material on the DVD, and so
it's just like the bonus cup.
Exactly, that was the plan.
What about Netflix?
Netflix, I don't know. It'll be there one day. That's all kind of beyond me. I don't quite know how it all works, but Netflix comes a little later. For a movie like us, you know, it's, I mean, this is as independent of a film as you can get. You know what I mean? It was four of us in the beginning making this thing. We ended up getting a handful of other people on the back end to help just make this thing happen. But there's no studio, there's no nothing. It was me and James sitting in his little girl's playroom editing this thing. You know, Deedle. So what I'm getting at, it's so independent that, you know, we could just put it up on Netflix. We could just give this movie away. And it's not about getting rich, because none of us would ever assume that's going to happen. But the movie did cost a lot of money out of our pockets. You know, we did not do a Kickstarter or anything. Reason we didn't, and people have asked, it's because for about a year, we didn't know if it was going to get made. We didn't want to raise all this money and then, you know, not be able to get Bill or whatever. We didn't know if we were going to be able to do it. So as things came up, we would reach in our pockets and pull out money and go fly to LA and get interviews and then come back. And we just did the entire film that way. And then the real money came on the back end, having to pay for licensing and all that stuff and, you know, publicists and just all this other stuff, because you want this thing to get seen by people. And so that all costs money. And so yeah, we're just trying to sell it, do screenings just to kind of, you know, get the money back. Hopefully try to do a new project, you know, but it's a very tough industry. I have to say, I can't imagine trying to do a film about a band that didn't have this huge fan base that we had. You know, if you're starting from nothing and trying to do an independent film, I don't see how people do it.
So Netflix is just giving it away?
Well, no. I'm not saying that, but Netflix, you know, from what I understand, it's the process for a movie like us is that you try to kind of get it to the fan base first. You know, if they can buy it directly from us, profits on this film are split with the band 50-50. You know what I mean? You're helping out the band that you love. You're helping out independent filmmakers. So that's kind of the idea. Now, Netflix will, what I hope, will help us reach an audience well beyond the fan base. But for right now, we're trying to just get the fan base and punk fans in general to realize that this thing exists and that, it, you know, this band is an important blip on this map that we all love.
Yep, and you don't even need to buy it. You could rent it if you want to.
That's true, yeah. But it'll be on Netflix one day, to answer the question. Maybe in a year or something, I don't know.
Babo, music maestro.
Okay, how about some more Descendants?
I knew you were going to say that.
This one comes from the Milo Goes to College record. It's I'm Not a Loser on Dying Scene Radio.
Spend all your money on shitty cars. right. I'm not a loser. I'm not a loser. Cruise on the boulevard, wasting mommy's cash while you're looking for the kicks on Friday night. While they're going live, it's a smoke cut joint. You decide how you're gonna get laid tonight. You're a fucking son of a bitch. You arrogant assholes. Your pants are too tight. You fucking homos. You suck. Mr. Butt Fuck, you don't belong here. No way. You fucking gay. I'm not a loser.
What's up? This is Fletcher from Chaos Delivery Machine. I'm sitting here with
Justin from Chaos Delivery Machine.
Okay, here we go again.
What am I supposed to say?
Just say it more fluidly. Hey, what's up? This is Fletcher from Chaos Delivery Machine. And just,
and this is God, Justin, man. Listen, from Chaos Delivery Machine. Is that more fluid?
After I fucking say my sentence, then you say yours.
Okay.
Hey, what's up? This is Fletcher.
Hey, what's up? This is Justin.
We're really bad at drops, but you are listening to Dying Scene Radio. Turn this shit up, bitches.
Rotting Out, which, by the way, my favorite record that Descendants did is from that one right there, Everything Sucks.
Yeah, I love and, that record was a life changer for me as well.
Me too, and that's kind of when I first caught on to Descendants. That track, Rotting Out, from their 1996 Epitaph release. Yeah, man, that was my first, probably, exposure to the Descendants, and then I backtracked from there. But, man, what a great band, man. I'm so jelly, man, that you got a chance to go and meet all these dudes and you know, shake hands and rub elbows with these guys, man. What an awesome, awesome time, man. That whole era of music for me was life-defining and life-changing. And that record especially, man. Everything Sucks!
That's right. Yeah, that's one of my favorite records for sure.
Yeah, man. Bobby, what you got?
Well, speaking of Epitaph Records, man, Epitaph Records punk outfit Plague Vendor is featured in the new trailer for Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5, and the game is the 10th game in the series and the follow-up to 2002's Pro Skater 4. Matt, you know, it's interesting how soundtracks to surfing and skateboarding videos, not even mentioning video games at this point, but like bands like Pennywise, for instance, you know, they were put on the map from videos and stuff like that. I wonder how influential video games were in the spread of punk rock music and making it mainstream.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Tony Hawk games and all that. I know Descendants had a song on one of those.
They did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard to find music even today. You know, I think there's kind of a myth that people think, oh, it's easy to find stuff, you just find it now. I think it's harder. There's so much because now you're sifting. You know, it used to be you just existed and something would come into your life, whether it be your older brother's record collection or, you know, a video, some VHS skate tape, you know, and you don't even know who these bands are and you're obsessed with it, or a mixtape or something, and that came into your life and that defined you. Well, now how do you do that? Because you just can now have an endless array of genres, and you know what I'm getting at? Like, Used to, your life was kind of defined outside of you. Here's what you have access to, and let's see if you're attracted to that. You know what I mean? And if you're not, then you move until you find something you are. Now it's, I don't know. I don't know what it's like to grow up now, perhaps with the internet, you know, and all that. But it's, to me, it seems harder. To me, it seems like you're sifting through a lot of stuff that you don't like.
How old are you, Matt?
Last time I checked, which was 3 years ago. No, I'm 36.
All right, nice. I'm 35, so same age.
All right, that
good,
counts.
Good. It's not like Tony Lombardo, man. He was 34 years old when he started playing with those guys.
Can you imagine?
They
were 15. Can you imagine just now starting a band with the kids down the street?
No, I mean, dude, they were actually kind of looking like
I wish there were a few kids down the street. Honestly, I would get in on that. That sounded way creepier than I meant it. But anyway, it's all about the music. Is what I'm saying. But yeah, no, Tony's young at heart. I'll tell you that much.
It's similar to the age difference that Bob and I have.
Not even close. I think there's 10 years between us, not 20.
No, but that is crazy, though. I mean, I just couldn't believe that he was 34 years old and playing with 15-year-olds. It really is a different time. I don't think you could do that now. You couldn't.
Yeah, well, you know, because what would have happened, right? Let's explore this. If the Descendants were happening now, so it was Frank and Bill playing and they need a bassist and they hear, you know, the way the story unfolded is they heard a bass guitar down the street. They don't care who it is. That's what they need. They go get them.
Get all.
Exactly. It's just like, well, here's what we have. Let's make this work. You know, it was kind of the attitude, which is what, when I started a band, that's what it was like. Now you would go to Craigslist and you would type in the exact features of the bass player you're looking for and somebody might respond. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think if they would have found Tony Lombardo on Craigslist, I think they would have said, how old are you, by the way? You know, and then that would have just been it. Who knows?
Matt, what's the strangest thing that you've gotten off of Craigslist?
Well, I just got these drums off Craigslist, which was good. I haven't had too many bad experiences, although it's always, I sell things more. Like when I moved, I sold a bunch of stuff. And when people show up, there's this thing that like, I sold a bunch of stuff within like a 4-day period, you know? And so I just kind of every day had 2 or 3 people coming over and picking stuff up. And to me, like from my viewpoint, they all seem like they knew each other. You know, it wasn't strangers from all around me. It was like just another one of those guys. They all seem the same to me. And you know what I mean? So that was my strangest experience with it.
Kind of like a Walmart mentality.
Right, exactly. The people of Craigslist.com.
I wonder if that's a thing yet.
I don't know.
Bobby, you got some more news?
Yeah, man. Jim Atkins, frontman of Jimmy Eat World, has announced a series of solo tour dates in Europe and a string of digital singles to be released this summer. The first of these digital singles, titled I Will Go, was released back on Friday, July 10th, and subsequently Atkins will release a new digital single each Friday between now and August 14th, culminating as a set of 7 inches in September. And you can subscribe to this series at kingsroadmerch.com/JimAtkins. The singles include a mixture of originals and covers of musicians like Everly Brothers, Beck, and Cyndi Lauper. Matt, another frontman who's currently doing the solo thing is your homie Dave Smalley, man. Recently, our sponsor Fat Enzo T-shirts produced some band merch for Dave Smalley's solo tour, and the original All Frontman is currently out playing shows in support of his new solo release entitled Punk Rock Days. In addition, Smalley's longtime band Down by Law is going to be releasing Equators, which is a new split 7-inch with End of Pipe. Someone just recently posted the cover art for that new record. What was it like interviewing Dave Smalley, man? You mentioned enjoying Dave's vocal range and everything and liking him as the all front man, your personal favorite. He was a cool dude, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I was not there at. So I'm sorry to bust that bubble. But I can tell you, he was a very nice guy. One of the things that's cool about anybody that we interviewed from the bands, they all really respect each other so much, very mutually. You know what I mean? It's not
it's
like
a brotherhood.
Yeah, it really is. It's very pure that way. It's not like, oh, it's just this random guy that played for us for like a year. I mean, and what I find most fascinating, like for instance, Scott and Chad just played a string of shows together. You know, they were singers. They were never in the band together. It was Scott. He quit. Chad took over. But they're like friends. I mean, everybody knows each other. You know what I mean? Carl and Tony Lombardo know each other well. And so they're just kind of this group of people that still are in contact and all this, you know. So Smalley's right there with them. And
it's interesting, though, when you say Descendants / all, you know. And
yeah,
Bob, you and I have talked about the slash. on numerous occasions. But, you know, it really is everything. It's both of those bands, and they're all, like, friends and everything, and they're all, like, one entity.
Yeah, it's
even
all,
though it's really
all
two bands.
One thing, yeah. Yeah, I think Zach Blair had the comment that I liked where he's like, you just kind of have to be a fan at the whole thing. You know, it's not a really a fan of this fan. You really just have to like the thing, you know?
Yeah.
So let's play some more music. This one right here is from Mike Watt and the Second Missing Men. It's a punk rock trio formed by former Minutemen and Firehose bassist Mike Watt. Check it out, man. This is Kabuki Girl. Yeah. This is a classic Descendants track right here, man. This is Mike Watt and the Second Missing Men right here on Dying Scene Radio.
Look out, get out of my way. I'm going to the Atomic Cafe. I'm going to the Atomic Cafe. You're a mystery to me, Kabuki Girl. Don't say sayonara. Tomorrow, I wanna see you tonight. You're a mystery to me, Kabuki Girl. Face is white, hair is black. Mom is stabbing in the back. Well, that's a chance that I'm gonna take. Don't say sayonara. I wanna see you tomorrow. I wanna see you tonight. You're a mystery to me, Kabuki Girl. East is east, west is west. Girls from east are the best. They got more of what I'm looking for. Look out, get out of my way. I'm going to the Atomic Cafe. I'm going to the Atomic Cafe. You're a mystery to me, Kabuki Girl.
This is Tom Petta from Big Wig, and you're listening to Dying Scene Radio. Head over to iTunes and leave some horrible comments about Bob.
My room's a mess, and I don't care. I'm tired of sitting at my desk. You can't bother me, but yeah, I'm far, far away. I gotta get away to the Catalina Wine Mixer. You can't ruin my day. You can't tell me what to do, and you cannot make me think that I love you.
Shoot it in your arm, you gotta make. I'm on my way to Catalina. I'm not gonna reach your book. My temple is great, it's getting light. And you whores, you can't make me want. I got all the fish I need on the deck of my boat. You can't break my heart when I'm here. I'll swim home from you, you little. I'll steal some gas. I'll fix my motor.
That was pretty interesting stuff right there, man. That was a cool track from The Bronx, the American hardcore punk band out of Los Angeles that also performs as their mariachi alter ego, Mariachi El Bronx, doing Catalina. That was probably my favorite track I played all night today, Bobby. Back to you in the newsroom, Bobby.
Well, I just got one more, man. Legendary British amplifier company Marshall is getting into the smartphone business. And the company previously had some successful forays with Bluetooth speakers and headphones. The listed price works out to just under $600 US. It includes some custom music applications, two headphone jacks, and front-facing speakers, and is based on the Android platform. Bob, you're an Android guy, man. Is this new Marshall smartphone on your radar?
I'm pretty sure that you probably got that post off of my Facebook feed. I reposted that the second it came out just because I thought it was awesome. But, yeah, man, I'll take one.
Matt, what about you? Are you an Android or an iPhone?
You know, I got the iPhone, but, you know, I saw that and I read that article, and it seems cool until I saw the price, and it's like, eh. I'd rather have a guitar.
What do they want, like $600?
Yeah.
I got a Note 4 that's $850.
Oh, is that right? Well,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I have my iPhone I've had for several years. So, but I thought that was pretty kick-ass. Just the shell of that Marshall phone was pretty cool.
Hell yeah. Hey, quick technology check. What model iPhone you got?
Oh, we're working with a 5 over here.
Okay, yeah, you're there. Yeah. Okay. You've at least got the one with the lightning charger, right?
I do. All right. Had to buy good new stuff. Chargers. Thanks for bringing that sore spot up.
I got the iPhone 5 too, Bob. It's perfect. It's fine.
I have an iPhone 5 also. It's my work phone.
Look at you.
Well, we're in agreement.
I like the iPhone because it's more podcast friendly, man. By the way, Matt, I think there's a lot of parallels between podcasting and documentary filmmaking, man. Do you have any helpful hints or tips for us in regards to lining up guests and just putting together a kick-ass, well-produced product such as your film?
Well, thank you. As you know, you gotta care. It really is obvious when somebody doesn't care, whether it's a podcast, a film, a book, a record, a show. It's really obvious when somebody's just not, like, you know, stressing out over this thing at the very last second. You know, I mean, you have to, right? That's mm-hmm. what makes stuff interesting. People have asked if we're doing another film, and we've talked about it. We have a couple of things, like, brewing. But, you know, this was something that we all really were passionate about, these guys. And so it's not a matter of just plugging a formula in. You got to really care, you know?
Well, I really care. I don't know if you could tell. Bob doesn't care. Could you tell?
Oh, come on.
That's right. It's obvious. It's all over your faces.
I'm here in my garage in my easy chair with my flippy floppies on. Gotta care in the world.
That's all the news stories I have, and that's all the questions I have for you, Mr. Riggleman. That's it for my inquisitive nature. I got nothing else.
Awesome.
Bob, do you have any last words for Matt?
Nothing much, man. Matt, thanks so much for your time, man. I thought that the film was awesome. I'm sure we could talk all day and night about punk rock and the Descendants and all. But you know what I'll do instead, man? I'm going to bid you guys adieu and say goodnight. And then I'm going to play this track right here by All, taking it back to where it all started from, man. Alfredo's. You guys know anything about Alfredo's? Go write them a nice Yelp review. They're still open, man. Staples in the South Bay community there. All right, man. Matt, thank you so much. Have a great one. Mr. Pickles, you good?
What was the deal with Alfredo's?
What's interesting is they were a brand new restaurant, husband and wife restaurant, at the time when All was a brand new band, and now they're both veterans. You know what I mean? It's kind of a funny thing. They're getting ready to retire, as far as I know.
And Bob, bring me to school really quick. That was something I missed.
What's that?
It's the Alfredo's. Dave Smalley was talking about joining the band, and he flew in and spent a lot of time, you know, on the plane. Oh. And basically, they stopped at Alfredo's and gave him some pasta or I'm sorry, some Mexican food.
Yeah, Mexican.
Whatever he got. Yeah, Mexican. I think Alfredo's,
right,
I think pasta.
It was right down the street from their practice space /house. They lived in their practice space, and it was right down the street. And they ate there just about every day because Bill said for less than $5, you would just be full all day.
That's right, man. He flew in, and then he put him right to work. And when he wanted to stop doing the vocals, he taped a Snickers bar to the window. And he said if he gets it right, he could have the Snickers bar.
There.
That's great.
That's a great story.
All right, man. Bob, take us out.
I think I already did, man. Here's that track right here. It's Alfredo's in Awe on Dying Scene Radio.
Here's a message from the boys of All, not to be rude. Ben Weasel with Screeching Weasel. You're listening to Dying Scene Radio. God help you.
Dying.